With me, I'm just going to bore you to tears for about 30 seconds while I cover this very quickly. So we know there's a lot of literature out there which suggests that people's language differs when they lie compared to when they tell the truth. And we think that this kind of happens because liars aren't able to recreate the characteristics of genuine recall. So for example, there's some literature to suggest that liars use fewer self-references, they give less sort of sensory and perceptual detail, and they use more cognitive mechanism words. And all of this research has kind of fed into looking at verbal coding schemes, the two most popular being criteria-based content analysis and reality monitoring, which we've heard a little bit about already today. So very, very briefly, CBCA looks at 19 criteria which are thought to occur more commonly in truthful statements. This includes things like the statement is rich, the statement is logical and coherent and contains no contradictions. Reality monitoring also focuses on criteria that are more common in truthful statements. In this case, it includes things like perceptual details, so tastes and smells, contextual information, so information about objects and events, and reference to cognitive operations. So here we're looking at thoughts and reasonings behind why an individual has done something. And I've given some references in the slide of some research which has shown that these schemes can differentiate lies from truths at rates of 64 to 85%. So there is a suggestion that there's some utility in these approaches in terms of detecting deception. So what am I interested in today then? Well, one of the problems, which some of the other presenters have already touched upon this morning, is that the content of these statements tend to be examined in isolation. So we don't always think about the other factors that might be influencing the content of these statements. And one of the things that I'm particularly interested in is the interpersonal process. So it seems to me that not taking into account this interpersonal process is kind of a big oversight, because there's a huge amount of literature out there on accommodation. And luckily for me, Matthew and Nora introduced this very nicely this morning, this idea of synchronization or accommodation. So the general idea that what we say is influenced by what another speaker says or has said before. And I was interested in how this might relate to deception. So there is evidence for this process already out there. So some of the work that we've done looked at police interviews, and we found that suspects gradually accommodate to the language style of the interviewer over time, and this tends to be associated with them confessing. There's also literature to suggest that interview style affects the type of responses that are given. So we find more perceptual details when a cognitive interview approach is used. And we find less reference to cognitive operations when an interrogative approach is taken, for example, the behaviour analysis interview, or when individuals are placed under greater cognitive load. For example, they might be asked to talk in reverse order. Okay, so I was kind of interested in how this might work in an interview setting. So I was really interested in how these external language cues might impact on what an individual's saying. And in particular, I was interested in what this might mean when an individual is fabricating a story or telling a lie. And the reason for this really is because I expected these effects to be more pronounced in this setting, because liars are under greater cognitive load, and so they're likely to be more susceptible to these external cues. So in the first study, the hypothesis was that participants will unconsciously adopt aspects of irrelevant speech into their own speech, and this will particularly be the case when they're fabricating. Okay, so this data was collected in Sweden. For some reason, it is much easier to get willing participants in Sweden, and also much easier to get money to pay them. So we had 44 participants, and they were given a cue word, and they were asked to either talk about a genuine event, a genuine experience related to this cue word, or they were asked to fabricate an experience to something that they hadn't done. The other condition was a speech condition. So there's a quiet condition or a control condition. And in this condition, the participants just gave their account as normal. And then we had an irrelevant speech condition. In this condition, participants listened to a passage of a relevant speech over headphones as they were giving their account. And they were told to just ignore this passage of speech. Okay, so we were interested in whether or not these interviewees were adapting aspects of their relevant speech into their own accounts. And one of the ways that we looked at this was by calculating a language matching index. So you've heard a little bit about LUIC already this morning. So this is great, it's making this very easy for me. So basically, we were interested in comparing the type of speech that was present in the participant's account with the speech that was present in this passage of a relevant speech that they heard. And to do this, we use this formula. Here, negations is used as an example. So negations I are the amount, or the proportion of negations that are present in our passage of a relevant speech. And negations P are the proportion of negations that are present in the participant's speech. And what this does is it gives a score between 0 and 1. So I've got a sad face here. A score of 0 suggests there's not really a lot of matching going on. There's not a lot of synchrony between the two accounts. Whereas a score of 1 indicates perfect synchrony between them both. And obviously there's degrees in between, which give an indication of how much matching is occurring between the two. Okay, so if you remember, our hypothesis was that participants will unconsciously adopt aspects of a relevant speech into their own speech, and we were particularly interested in what happened when they were fabricating. So the relevant passage of speech that we played them was high in adverbs, high in affect, and quite low in personal pronouns. We didn't particularly choose this passage for any reason. It was just a first very basic low-level test of the phenomena, if you like. And we found the same pattern in our participants who heard this passage of a relevant speech, but particularly when they were fabricating a story. So we found that these participants were higher in terms of their use of adverbs, in terms of their use of affective language. At this stage, we haven't broken it down into positive or negative affect. And they showed a decrease in personal pronouns. Personal pronouns is potentially a little bit tricky because a lot of the literature suggests that liars tend to use fewer of these anyway. And that's something that we look at a little bit in the next experiment. Okay, so what I then wanted to do was kind of really tap into the interpersonal nature of this. So to set up an interview setting to explore the same process. So we had three hypotheses. The first two map onto what we found in experiment one. So we expect that generally individuals will adapt the same language as another speaker. So they'll be more primed by an interviewer's change in language and will respond to this by using the same language. And we also predicted that this would more so be the case when they were lying compared to when they were telling the truth. And then we added in another hypothesis, which was that when we were changing the interviewer's language and the participant was responding, this would result in more instances of CBCA criteria being present when the interviews were coded later. And this is because the language categories that we chose kind of map on to some of the categories that we see in CBCA. So we set up a situation where we had participants tell a truth and a lie in answer to a series of questions. So it was a within participant design. And the questions were designed to manipulate four linguistic categories that are commonly implicated in CBCA research. So these were self-references, And I know there's some kind of debate around a few of these categories in the literature anyway, in terms of the patterns that they show in relation to deception. But generally, it's suggested that when we're being truthful, we use more self-references. Negations tend to be used more when we're lying. And perceptual details and effective language tend to be used more in truthful speech. So these are the four categories that we were interested in. Okay, so we had 95 undergraduate participants. And they took part in a 30-minute problem-solving task with a confederate. So the first part of the task was our control or baseline, where they took part in the problem-solving task as normal, there were no manipulations. We then had a cheat manipulation. So the second problem-solving task was very difficult, if not impossible, to solve. And the role of the confederate was to try and encourage the participant to cheat during this task, which meant that then in the second task, they had to fabricate how they'd solved it. So they had to lie about how they'd managed to solve the task. And of course, we had some additional incentives. So participants were told that if they solved the tasks within a certain time period, they would get more money. During the interview, we had the language manipulation. So this is when we're trying to manipulate these four categories that we're interested in. Okay, and all of the data was captured so that we could analyse it using Loic again to look at this language matching metric. Okay, so we had 8 questions. 2 of them contained a personal pronoun prime. So this would be things like I. 2 contained a perceptual prime. So here we're looking at sights and sounds. 2 contains an affective prime. And 2 contains a negation prime. And these were counterbalanced across participants so that not every participant heard the same question with the same word prime. There's 8 questions in total. 4 were about the first baseline condition where participants told the truth, and 4 were about the second task where they had to lie and fabricate. Okay, so I've got 3 minutes, so I'm going to speed up a little bit. Okay, so here we've got the mean matching scores, and this is a function of whether participants received a prime or not, and which prime they received in interview, and also their veracity. So the kind of general overview of this is that participants are generally more primed by an interviewer's language when they receive a prime versus no prime. And this is particularly the case for pronouns, negations, and affective language. And this effect is more pronounced when they lie. So this is kind of the important part. When participants lie, they tend to synchronize or match more with the interviewer's language. And we particularly find this for pronouns, negations, and perceptual language. So really what we wanted to do was see, well, what effect does this have if we're making veracity judgments from these participants' accounts? What sort of impact does it have? So we had 3 coders who were trained in statement validity analysis. And we had them, they were blind to the purpose of the study, blind to the condition, and we had them code all of the interviews. So we split the interviews and we had them code lies and truths because essentially they're doing the same task. The inter-rater scores were generally high. We then ran an ANOVA. So we were looking at how veracity influenced the CBCA scores that were present in the transcripts. And we found that when participants were lying, there were significantly more CBCA criteria present. And the effect of this was actually that our liars were rated to appear more like truth tellers when they were rated using the coding scheme. Okay, so conclusions. So liars show a change in language that's consistent with our hypotheses. So at a very low level, they're adopting aspects of this irrelevant speech that they're told to ignore. In an interpersonal situation, we also find this. So when we deliberately ask interviewers to change their language in some way, We find that participants are primed by this, but importantly, they're more primed by this when they're lying compared to when they're telling the truth. And this impacts on subsequent ratings using CBCA. So in terms of future directions, it'd be good to explore the practical implications of this. So we know that criticism of deception research generally is in terms of its ecological validity, so it'd be great to look at this in some real data. Which kind of leads on to my next point, which is that in this setting, our interview questions were scripted. Obviously, that's not the case generally. And so it'd be useful to see if there's any categories of language that are particularly present in the interview setting that we could maybe look at in that way. And also in terms of it as a bi-directional process. So in this case, we're only looking at the impact of the interviewer on the interviewee. But obviously, we know that that's not how interaction works generally, and so we need to look at the impact of the interviewee in this as well. And I will stop there before Sophie yells at me. Thank you.